When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and it's Saturday. Time to go into the vault for a classic episode of the show. This one was originally called Surfing Neanderthals, and it published on August 27th, 2019.
So grab a board, the surf is up.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick. And before we turn the mics on, or actually after we turn the mics on, but before we officially started the episode, we were just talking about, is there a better 80s action movie than Point Break?
I mean, arguably, there are some definitely some action pictures that I love more than Point Break. But Point Break has a purity to it. You know, the weird nobility of this band of nomadic surfers who are also bank robbers, and the man who is pursuing them, a man who must become a surfer in order to catch surfers. Because isn't that the old saying, in order to catch a surfer, you must become a surfer?
Uh-huh.
Something like that.
Patrick Swayze is the key to the movie. Oh, and hey, by the way, if you're out there some kind of pedant saying, wait a minute, Point Break didn't come out in the 1980s, how are you saying it's the best 80s action movie? As we all know, in the cinema world, the 1980s lasted until 1992.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's a solid argument. But yeah, this was some really great Swayze in this film. Like Swayze just has such a unique charisma that – It's like with Roadhouse, you know. He's able to be just so serious in this role, and you're laughing because it is ridiculous. But at the same time, you're totally buying into this presentation he's giving you.
Absolutely, the deep seriousness in the delivery of the lines, like "pain don't hurt."
Mm-hmm.
The fact that he is trying to commit to this character who's like a philosopher bouncer.
Yeah, in Roadhouse. Yeah,
in Roadhouse. But I mean, essentially, I think he's playing the same character in Point Break. In Roadhouse, he's a philosopher bouncer. In Point Break, he's the same character. He's now become a philosopher surfer slash bank robber.
Yes. Yeah, and he's tremendous. You just like he eats up every scene he's in.
Point Break is a great example of one of these 80s again, 1991, but it was the 80s. 80s action movies that is so silly in a way that, like, there are still action movies that have a great spirit of silliness, that aren't like these unpleasant, self-serious action movies. You know, a good example is like the later movies in the Fast and the Furious franchise, which can be a lot of fun, but they're in on the joke. Like The Rock is winking at the camera. It's, mm-hmm. you know, it's played explicitly for a kind of like wet laughter that like cars can fly and all this. But that's not what's going on in Point Break. Point Break and some of the movies like it are just as silly as the later Fast and the Furious movies, but they're not winking at you. They're not in on the joke. Instead, they've got Patrick Swayze, who's taken himself real seriously.
I wonder if part of that is that a film like Point Break, like building on the, in a sense, even though it's an 80s and so technically 90s film, it's building on like the grittier like a film heritage of the 1970s that preceded it.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas 90s films are proceeding from the 80s films and so forth, to where there's just like the initial groundwork underneath something like The Fast and the Furious is just that much sillier and that and just further removed from like 1970s cinema.
Wait a minute. Why are we talking about Point Break?
Oh, yeah. We're talking about it because this episode's about surfing Neanderthals. I mean, it's also not about surfing Neanderthals, but it is about Neanderthals. It's about surfer's ear.
Uh-huh.
And
surfing Neanderthals, the working title of Point Break that was on the script.
That's exactly where my mind went when I first read a very recent scientific paper that came out about uh-huh. Neanderthals and surfer's ear. But before we get into all that, and we may come back to Point Break as we proceed, I want to be clear that this episode's not really about surfing. It doesn't have that much to do with surfing. But I do want to point out the ancient origins of this aquatic practice we call surfing.
What? Surfing wasn't invented in the 1960s?
No. And I was looking at a couple of sources on this, but one of the better ones I came across was a book by Ben R. Finney and James D. Houston called Surfing, A History of the Ancient Hawaiian Sport. And it's pretty insightful. They point out that all you need really to surf is a surfer and a board and, of course, waves.
Okay.
Or something standing in for a board, such as a canoe or even the surfer's own body. I mean, you can body surf.
Mm-hmm. Wait, you don't need a surf ball?
A surf ball?
You don't need a surf suit?
Well, as we'll discuss, it can be very helpful, uh-huh. especially in the colder waters. But, you know, it's ultimately, and I don't know, have you ever surfed, Joe? Have you ever?
Very limited water experience. I've done like knee boarding and
okay.
stuff. I know that's not surfing. I'd say that's the closest analogy.
But you've gotten up on your knees on a surfboard.
Well, not on a surfboard, on a knee board. I don't okay. know how different they are.
But
I've gotten up on my knees on a floating thing that was being towed behind a boat.
Okay, well, a little. It's not close, but it's enough. We can build from here.
Okay.
So I am not a surfer, but I on a trip to Hawaii, like 20 years ago or something. I was encouraged by a friend to go out and try it.
Okay.
This friend had surfed before. This is very helpful, I find, if you are going to try to surf. Certainly go with someone who has at least done it once before,
mm-hmm.
Preferably somebody who is more skilled than that. But there is this kind of magical moment where you're pushing the board. You're paddling and kicking. You're just going as hard and as fast as you can. And then there comes this almost magical moment where the wave catches the board. And suddenly the wave is propelling the board. And this mm-hmm. is the point where then you can climb up onto your knees on the board. And then once you figure out what you're doing, this is where you can rise up on both of your feet on the board. And you can ride the surfboard like a surfer rides a surfboard. And
sounds hard.
I mean, it's one of those things where I definitely would have given up had I not been encouraged to keep doing it, mm-hmm. you know, to just, all right, keep, do it again. Once more, let's paddle back and then paddle as hard and fast as you can to try and catch this magical moment when the board catches you.
Okay.
And so like so all you need is a board, the waves, yourself, and then like the patience and or courage to reach that point where you can rise up on the board and become comfortable enough doing so that you can manipulate the board further.
Okay. So if surfing was not invented by the Beach Boys in the mid 20th century, where does surfing actually come from?
Well, as the authors of this point out, Hawaii is, of course, strongly associated with surfing. And mm-hmm. humans seem to have first arrived at these far-flung Polynesian islands by between 300 and 400 CE. Now, longboards would have developed over time, and the authors guess that Hawaiian surfing is ultimately perhaps 1,000 years old. Yet the principles involved would have been known to Pacific Islanders and the first pioneers to enter the Pacific as far back as 2000 BCE. So, you know, it's one of those, again, it's one of those things where the necessary technology and ability, you know, is not something that where it did not exist before 1,000 years ago. You know,
right. Like
conceivably, you know, these more ancient cultures knew of the properties involved.
So we don't know for sure how far back it could go.
Right. And there's also some debate whether a form of stand-up paddleboarding practiced by the pre-Incan civilization in Peru would have constituted surfing some 2,000 years ago.
Hmm.
Of course, that's another thing. You get into, you know, discussions of the terminology. Is it truly surfing? Is it something else? Are the people on these paddleboards ever reaching that point where the magic of the wave takes over and propels them? But anyway, I found it'll be useful, I think, to just think of that as we proceed in order to also keep it connected to surfing in some way, to think of surfing as this thing that is at least 1,000 years old, maybe older, and ultimately, just based on the technology involved, is not all that, constrained to a particular portion of human time.
For all we know, dinosaurs were surfing. Definitely
well, not,
Denver, the dinosaurs
not,
was surfing.
Well, no, the dinosaurs were not surfing. But, I mean, ultimately, to come back to the title of the episode, when you start wondering if Neanderthals surfed, there's absolutely no evidence that they did. But when you start considering the technology involved, yes, somebody could make a case for it, and it would be, you know, you wouldn't be able to prove it necessarily, but you wouldn't be able to disprove it. So what we're going to be talking about, though, in this episode is more a matter of what is known as surfer's ear.
Okay. Now, I remember from when I was a kid, people I knew getting swimmer's ear, but that was just like ear infections, right?
Right. Swimmer's ear is a different thing. This is a bacterial infection of the outer ear, often caused by trapped water. So water or debris, you know, gets trapped in the ear and it can cause an infection. And depending on like the state and condition of your ear canals, some people are more have a greater tendency to get swimmer's ear than other people.
I remember people with swimmer's ear being treated by just getting like ethyl alcohol pulled in there, or maybe I don't know what kind of some kind of alcohol poured in their ear.
Yeah, there's just a standard swimmer's ear. Yeah, droplets you can get. Mm-hmm. I used some like just the other day because I swim fairly regularly. But then also not to be confused with the drops you would get for a full-blown ear infection. Like
okay.
This is where everything is actually getting like more and more painful in your ear, and that may require some more advanced drops.
Ugh.
But that's not really what we're talking about here. What we're talking about here is exostosis of the external auditory canal, or external auditory exostosis, or EAE, also known as surfer's ear.
And it's in the game.
Yeah. And it's a condition that affects both modern humans and our prehistoric ancestors. So what is EAE? Well, these are dense bony growths that grow, that slowly extend into the auditory ear canal.
Whoa, bony growths in the ear canal?
Now, yeah.
Please reassure me, Robert, that these growths are not like spiny.
No. These are rounded growths. Uh-huh. That, you know, basically, if you look at an image of this, mm-hmm. it looks like there are bony growths on, you know, underneath the skin on either side that are pushing in, causing kind of a cave-in, a gradual cave-in of the auditory canal.
Oh, that still doesn't sound good.
So the question is, what causes them? Well, this is where it gets weird. It is We basically still have a lot of questions about surfer's ear, but the widely accepted hypothesis is the aquatic hypothesis, and that is that it is caused by repeated exposure to cold water or in some cases cold wind, but especially cold water, and it's typically encountered in cold water foraging among traditional and ancient peoples, as well as among cold water sports practiced today, such as surfing.
Okay.
Coming back to the question of what is required for surfing, and you asked about body suits and wetsuits or dry suits. And, you know, and a part of this is has to do with the fact that in addition to having to deal with, you know, potentially being scraped up against things you don't want your body scraped against, you're often also surfing in colder environments, and you want to protect your body from the cold. But cold water is also an irritant to the inner ear. And it is the most commonly observed irritant that leads to surfer's ear, and repeated irritation leads to this growth.
Now, wait a minute. It sounded like you were alluding to there being multiple potential explanations, right?
Well, this is the primary explanation. Uh-huh. And I did not encounter another explanation that was really presented. Basically, it's just there some mysteries remain about exactly how it occurs. Mm-hmm. Anybody that's discussing surfer's ear like is sticking to the aquatic hypothesis here. And certainly the evidence bears it out that you look at where surfer's ear occurs, and it occurs in the ears of individuals who are engaging in a lot of cold water activity, be it foraging, pearl diving, that sort of thing, or surfing. But other forms of irritation can technically cause it because it's just going to result in tissue inflammation in the inner ear.
Now, is this going to happen after just like you have a couple of bad days in cold water and you get these growths?
No. This is something that's going to develop over the years. So typically you see it manifest in a person during their mid to late 30s or possibly in their 40s, lining up with the timeline of their exposure to the irritation. It could potentially occur earlier, though, but like this is like when you think about like someone's prime surfing years and at what point they've been surfing for, for, say, 20 years, that sort of thing, it's going to line up with this.
So you're more likely to see it in people who spend a lot of time in the water over a long period of their lives.
Right. Yeah. They're spending a lot of time in cold water, like they're going surfing a lot or they're going pearl diving a lot with a fair degree of regularity.
Well, so it would seem like having bony growths protruding into your ear canal would not be a good thing.
Right. So for the longest, it's not really an issue. But, it'll reach the point where you'll have potential complications from your closing ear canals. That includes decreased hearing capability and increased likelihood of blockage and infection due to trapped earwax or debris. And, you see, generally you're looking at a 5 to 8 millimeter diameter ear canal. But this can be narrowed to almost total blockage over time by surfer's ear.
Am I imagining that there's kind of a cultural stereotype where the archetype, the surfer dude, the surfer person is saying like, what'd you say a lot? Is that just my imagination, or does that exist as part of the stereotype?
There's certainly a crossover between like the surfer stereotype and sort of the dude and sort of hippie freewheeling stereotype. I don't know if lack of hearing is really part of it, but it would make sense that it would be, right? Because based on what we're discussing here, this is where you're going to see some potential hearing loss due to exposure to the cold water. Now, an important thing to stress, though, is that we only discovered surfer's ear in the last century or so. I believe the first report on it was a German paper by Welker H. Uber in 1864. And so we haven't had that long to like really study it and figure out what the deal is with it or even to figure out how ways to treat it or how to prevent it. But the most obvious ways to prevent it are, of course, to avoid regular cold water activities, which may not be an option or desirable for you if you're really into surfing or you depend on some sort of cold water foraging. But I've read that cold water surfers are 600% more likely to experience it than warm water surfers.
And that sounds like a significant effect.
Yeah. Now, you can also wear varying forms of ear protection that will help, ranging from special plugs to special caps that go over your head and your ear to certain varieties of wetsuits. But if you reach the point where the bony protrusions have grown to the point that it's an issue, doctors can also remove the exostosis with a surgical drill. There are, I think, two different procedures, two different ways of going in there and drilling back the bony growths. And the good news is that if you have this done, you really probably only have to do it once, because mm-hmm. generally, you know, given the timeline of them growing back, they can grow back, but you probably won't reach that second point where you'll need to have them removed.
All right. Looks like we need to take a break, but when we come back, we will ask the question of why these spurs in the ears.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
All right, we're back.
All right, so we've been talking about surfer's ear, or the idea of external auditory exostoses, or EAE. And these are these bone-like protrusions into the ear canal that seem to pop up in people who spend a lot of their lives in cold water. If you're constantly irritating the ear canal with cold water, these things are likely to pop up. Now, I guess we haven't addressed yet why they occur.
Well, if you'll think back to the Bible, you have Cain and Abel. And Abel was really into staying on the land. Cain was a big surfer.
What?
So God punished him. No, that has nothing to do with that. Now, this is another area where there's still a lot of open questions about it.
Now,
some argue that it's essentially like bone spurs, you know, which these occur due to constant irritation or stress. Generally in the feet,
mm-hmm.
where you have these bony, protrusions that are forming in the foot, and
okay.
it can be quite painful. So one idea is that it's basically that irritation leading to growth, leading to symptoms. And there's not a lot else beyond that in terms of why, like what is the reason, you know, because it's like asking what is the reason for bone spurs?
Mm-hmm.
What are the reason for various ailments that afflict us due to the things that we insist on doing due to our human desire to ride waves or climb mountains to ridiculous heights, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But there is one area where you will see an argument for a purpose behind all that. Unfortunately, it's in aquatic ape theory.
Oh, yeah. So aquatic ape theory has come up on the show before. And I think we've talked about how this is one of those theories that's sticky. It's sticky beyond its explanatory power. And it's hard to know exactly why some hypotheses are like this, but I think it tends to be the ones that are just the most that offer the most totalizing explanation for the most phenomena through the most interesting image.
Yeah, and it does that. But it is also widely rejected by science.
Yeah, and we can talk about some reasons for that in a minute.
Yeah, but it does continue to come up. And, you know, in fact, it was recently brought up by none other than Sir David Attenborough himself.
Oh,
he apparently on a BBC4 series, he talked about it, and there were some that criticized him for, you know, bringing up a redundant scientific theory.
Well, I'm not going to slam. I mean, you know, we talk about theories that are not accepted because, you know, it's okay to talk about things.
I agree.
Yeah, you don't have to think something is correct to talk about it. But it sounds like he was sort of advocating it.
Well, I mean, he has a history of being interested in it. I read that he also organized a symposium on the topic back in 1992.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's like you said, we discuss theories and hypotheses on this show that are, you know, sometimes definitely under the category of rejected or unprovable.
Uh-huh.
And I think my opinion is that it is okay to discuss these. It's informative to discuss these ideas,
mm.
you know, as long as you're approaching them with the right attitude and you're not like, you know, you're not seeking to prove them, you know, in your discussion of what is unprovable.
Right. You're not becoming an evangelist for something based on bad evidence.
Right.
Now, for a brief refresh, in case you don't recall us talking about this theory in the past, the short version is I think that the original idea was that in 1960, a marine biologist named Alistair Hardy proposed this idea that we had an aquatic primate ancestor maybe 4 to 7 million years ago. And he proposed this in this article in New Scientist. I think he also gave a big talk about this. I think the idea was that us having an aquatic or semi-aquatic primate ancestor could explain many interesting morphological features of humans that distinguish us from our closest relatives like the other great apes. And there are a lot of examples of this, like why do we have less body hair than the other great apes? Why do we have this, you know, smoother skin? And his idea was, well, maybe we lost body hair and got smooth skin to streamline us for swimming, to reduce drag in the water. Why do we have a thicker layer of subcutaneous fat than I think all the other great apes? And his idea here is, well, maybe that's like what we see in marine mammals that they use for water insulation to help keep their bodies warm. Why do we stand upright instead of walking on all fours? The idea is, well, maybe we had to wade in the shallows and that got us standing up. And while it is an interesting idea, and I think, you know, it was clever for Hardy to come up with this, I think we now have better explanations for a lot of these interesting differences between humans and the other great apes. And there's also no direct physical evidence for
right.
the aquatic ape theory. But to bring it back to the context here, is this – you're saying that some enthusiasts of the aquatic ape theory would believe that our ear canals or features of our ear canals would seem to fit in with that list of supposed aquatic adaptations.
Yeah, I've read EAE positioned as possible evidence, that it's a narrowing of the ear canals in keeping with the narrowing of ear canals in aquatic mammals. Because true enough, the ear canals in toothed whales are narrow and clogged with debris and wax. In baleen whale, ear canals are plugged with a waxy cap.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are obvious problems with this because it's not like, there's not some sort of Lamarckian scenario going on here where surfers start surfing and then their ears mutate into weird forms. It's not like the children of surfers have permanently plugged ear holes or anything.
Right. But maybe the idea would be that we evolved the adaptation that gives our bodies the capability to adapt to repeated water exposure.
Right. Or we would have developed the genetic predisposition for surfer's ear. And we do have a genetic predisposition for surfer's ear.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be the case. But I think it's a stretch to tie it in with this largely refuted theory.
Yeah. I want to say, again, not that we accept the theory or would advocate it, but In the defense of this theory, it is interesting to consider, and there's nothing inherently implausible about the situation it imagines.
Nor insidious.
Right,
it's not
exactly,
really.
Sure.
It's not like an anti-science theory.
Right. It's just there's nothing implausible about like prehistoric primates migrating to a partially aquatic lifestyle and gaining biological adaptations in the process. It happened with other mammals, right? So it's not hard to believe that a similar thing could have in principle happened with primates, but the question is just, is that what the evidence we have today supports? And I think most experts, for good reasons, think the answer is no.
Right.
Most experts today believe the evidence for humans having an aquatic ape ancestor doesn't hold up very well. Again, there's zero direct evidence of it. So we don't have like remains of an aquatic ancestor. That just doesn't exist. So you're having to hypothesize a sort of like lost period that we haven't found direct evidence of yet, but just reason backwards from traits that exist later. But there's a basic question here. I came across this from the writings of some paleoanthropologist, and I'm sorry now I'm forgetting the person's name. But here's a basic answer. If all these traits that they're trying to explain through the aquatic ape theory were acquired through an aquatic lifestyle that happened maybe 4 to 7 million years ago, why were all the aquatic traits retained for millions of years after our ancestors supposedly moved back to dry land?
Mm-hmm.
You would expect like then these traits would be lost because now they'd be vestigial.
Yeah, we'd grow all that lovely hair back, et cetera.
Yeah. Unless you posit like, well, actually it turned out once you moved back onto land, there was a good reason for retaining that trait. Now it stayed because it served some other survival purpose. But then you could just short circuit the aquatic ape situation and say, well, maybe we just got those traits because it served some other purpose. So,
right. Like coming back to the hair theory of like the less hair you have, the more you're able to show off that parasite-free skin.
Right. That's a common theory. So there are a couple of major theories that exist now to explain why humans' ancestors lost a lot of the body hair they originally had. And we don't know the answer, but some fairly plausible answers seem to be that that it helped with heat dispersal. And that it was maybe a very good sexual selection signal. It showed off, I don't have any lice on me because look how little hair I have. And it turns out that I think there are better explanations like that. Again, we don't know them for sure, but they seem like very plausible, fitting with the evidence explanations for all of these traits that are answered through the aquatic ape theory. So why do we stand up on two legs? We don't know the answer, but a good candidate for that seems to be that we were using our hands for things. We adapted to want to have free hands. And other things like, a common one that's cited for the aquatic ape hypothesis is that why do we have voluntary control over our breath, right? We wouldn't need that unless we were trying to be able to dive underwater to get, marine mollusks or something as prey. But what if we evolved voluntary control of the breath because we needed to speak?
Right, to speak, to sing, to communicate with each other. These are activities that require control of breath.
Yeah. So I guess my main takeaway is that, I don't want to slam aquatic ape too hard. It's not like an odious theory or something. Mm-hmm. It's just that I think it's something that is – it's unfortunately sticky, and there are better hypotheses more in line with the actual evidence we have to explain the same morphological features that people appeal to the aquatic ape theory to explain.
All right. Well, on that note, let's take one more break. But when we come back, we'll get to some more good stuff discussing surfer's ear in human remains but also in the remains of Neanderthals.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
All right, we're back. So I think all this stuff about Surfer's Ear is fascinating in and of itself, but the extra cool thing here is that Surfer's Ear is detectable in human remains.
Oh, right, because it's not just soft flesh. They're like bony protrusions.
Yes. So we can look to coastal humans of the past and judge to what degree they were interacting with cold water.
Oh.
And then we can also, based on that, determine how such acts were divided between the genders based on the skeletal remains.
That's right, yeah.
For instance, in December of 2018, researchers from Washington University in St. Louis discovered skeletal evidence of Surfer's Ear in a pre-Columbian Panamanian village. They were looking at 125 skulls from 9 burial sites, and they found 7 cases in males, 1 in female. So this is interesting. You think of Panama and you think of you may think of warmer waters. Mm-hmm. But the water in the Gulf of Panama is actually quite cold between January and April. And the researchers believe that the divers here, the remains that they found were likely specialized pearl divers, probably going after stuff like mother of pearl or the orange and purple pearls that derive from two species of thorny oysters. These were popular in the region, and you also find these artifacts among the buried dead in these grave sites. Also, Spanish explorers would later record the activities of such pearl divers as well, you know, stating that they were trained since childhood to dive down 4 fathoms. That's 24 feet or 7.3 meters deep.
Ooh, my ears are hurting just thinking about that.
So, certainly like these would have been individuals diving down into those cold waters, training from an early age and developing these bony protrusions that were then detectable, ages later. When we look back and try to figure out how they lived. It's little things like that that are insightful about it.
But of course, we're talking about the recent past. We're talking about human remains, Homo sapiens. Is there a reason you brought up Neanderthals early on? I feel like there was.
Yes.
We got a connection here.
And that's because there's a very recent study, and this one came from Washington University, Eric Trinkus et al., authored a paper, External Auditory Exososis Among Western Eurasian Late Middle and Late Pleistocene Humans. And this was published in PLOS-1. So just a refresher about the Neanderthals, who we've talked about on the show before and we'll continue to talk about because there's always some sort of cool Neanderthal-related story coming out. They are our closest extinct relatives. They lived in Eurasia 200,000 to 30,000 years ago. We don't know exactly what happened to the Neanderthals. They likely transitioned from – they were likely originally transitioned from Homo antecessor to Homo Neanderthalensis 150,000 years ago, and then they went extinct 30,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. Now, we're continuing to learn a great deal about them, how they differed from us physically, but also what their culture may have consisted of. They were the ideal cold weather hominids, shorter and stockier than Homo sapiens. They had large brains, but it seems that their brains were far more suited for intense visual processing rather than social processing, which would have been needed in the lower light northern climates of Europe. Homo sapiens, on the other hand, are ultimately the evolutionary product of higher light regions of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So enter this new study from Eric Trinkaus et al., they examined well-preserved ear canals in the remains of 77 ancient humans, including Neanderthals and early modern humans of the middle to late Pleistocene epoch of Western Eurasia. So the rate of Homo sapiens surfer's ear was more or less standard, but half of the 23 Neanderthals sampled had EAE.
Hmm.
And their cases were mild to severe and were seen at roughly twice the frequency of Homo sapiens examples. So the obvious explanation would be that Neanderthals simply foraged in cold waters more than Homo sapiens, and that might well have been part of it. But certainly, it highlights that the cold waters were part of their foraging, realm.
Uh-huh.
But it also could mean that they just had an even greater genetic predisposition for EAE, because again, humans have a predisposition for EAE, and we see that in modern human genetics as well. So here's just a quick quote from Trinkaus about the study. Quote, an exceptionally high frequency of external auditory exotosis among Neanderthals and a more modest level among high latitude, earlier upper Paleolithic modern humans indicate a higher frequency of aquatic resource exploitation among both groups of humans than is suggested by the archaeological record. In particular, it reinforces the foraging abilities and resource diversity of the Neanderthals.
Well, that's interesting. So it's saying that this is an indication that maybe humans and especially Neanderthals of the time were spending more time foraging in the water than other evidence in the archaeological record would predict.
Yeah.
Just another example of possible evidence for Neanderthal exploitation of marine resources for food or whatever is a paper I was looking at from PNAS from 2008 by Stringer et al. That found – so it was looking at the Gibraltar region And the authors said that, quote, "We find indications that Neanderthals had knowledge of the geographic distribution and behavior of their prey. We present here the evidence from Gibraltar sites showing that Middle Paleolithic humans exploited not only mollusks, but also seals, dolphins, and fish through a wide spread of time." Dolphins and seals. So we got Neanderthals of the period potentially hunting marine mammals. Not quite whaling, but a modest form of marine mammal hunting.
And yeah, and then in the process of doing it, developing surfer's ear, possibly to the point of deafness. And by the way, there's another paper that was also from Trinkaus, from 2017, in which he and his team found an older Neanderthal from about 50,000 years ago who had suffered multiple injuries and become deaf. As such, he argued that the elder must have relied on the help of others to avoid prey and survive well into his 40s. Hmm. So, you know, sort of like sandwiching these two separate studies together, it kind of paints this picture, you know, of these these Neanderthals foraging in the cold waters, diving down for mollusks, going after these other marine creatures, and in doing so, like the older members of the society, at least the ones that are engaged in the aquatic foraging, you know, going deaf and then having to depend on other members of their society to survive.
So I know you've been picturing them as Patrick Swayze the entire time.
Well, no, but for some reason, when I first read the headline, like last week or the week before, my mind instantly went to Point Break. It is the surfing movie par excellence.
Wait, what about Surf Ninjas?
I've never seen Surf Ninjas. Can't vouch for it.
I haven't either. Yeah. I guess we'll have to come back and check out Surf Ninjas. I just looked it up. Oh, it has Rob Schneider in it. Ooh.
Is Hulk Hogan in that one?
Don't know. Not that I can see right here, unless he's a cameo.
Okay.
It's got Leslie Nielsen, Tone Loke, Rob Schneider, Ernie Reyes Jr.
An all-star cast. All right. Well, we'll have to leave it there. But, you know, again, Neanderthals continue to be a topic of interest, and there are always so many great potentially interesting studies that are coming out about them. So I'm sure we'll come back to the world of the Neanderthals in the future on Stuff to Blow Your Mind. In the meantime, if you want to check out other episodes of Stuff to Blow Your Mind, head on over to stufftoblowyourmind.com. You can also find our other show, Invention, at inventionpod.com. That's our journey through human techno history, looking at various inventions. We haven't done one on the surfboard, but that's exactly the kind of thing we could do, because we've been trying to cover a wide variety of inventions, from like major recent technologies to ancient inventions that are lost to time. Mm-hmm. From you know, from the advanced and the to the simple, from the obvious to the far less obvious. So check out that show if you haven't already. And if you want to support these shows that we're putting together for you, the best thing you can do is tell your friends about us. Wherever you get the podcast, rate and review us. Leave us some stars and a nice comment. That helps us out a lot.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer Maya Cole. If you'd like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release,
presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX this Friday and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.